You know, when I was first asked to deliver the lesson today by Robert, I told him I'd love to, but I may not have enough material for what you call a full-size sermon. He said, well, that's okay. And maybe I don't. But I figure in the spirit of Halloween, we're not going to call it short. We're just going to call it fun-sized. Okay? But with that, this probably will be a little bit short, but that's okay. And I realize part of the reason of that is that I am not a very dynamic or an exciting speaker. If you've heard me talk before, you probably know that. And that's okay. But I got to thinking, exactly why is that? And part of it, in a large part, comes down to massive stage fright. Stage fright, or performance anxiety, is the anxiety, fear, or persistent phobia, which may be aroused in an individual by the requirement to perform in front of an audience. Quite often, stage fright arises in mere anticipation of a performance, often a long time ahead. This is from Wikipedia. I can tell you this is very true. It has numerous manifestations: fluttering or pounding heart, tremor in the hands and legs, sweaty hands, facial nervous tics, dry mouth, and dizziness. So I say this not as an excuse, perhaps as an apology. But if you think of me being perhaps a reluctant speaker, I would say I have interesting company. So today we're going to take a brief look at three examples of men who were asked to speak, and they did so, but they answered that call with various degrees of enthusiasm. Turn quickly to the book of Jonah. Jonah 1:1. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah rose up to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. So he went down to Joppa, found a ship in which he was going to Tarshish, paid the fare, and went down into it with them to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. And perhaps one of the first men, biblically, that might come to mind if you think of a reluctant speaker would be that of Jonah. We're all familiar with his story. Called by God to go and preach to the great city of Nineveh, did he say, here am I, send me? No. He ran exactly the opposite direction. I believe from where we believe Jonah started, Nineveh would have been to the northwest. He ran to the east, exactly far away. So there were probably a lot of thoughts going through his head as to why he would do that. Well, Nineveh is too far. Maybe the Ninevites are all Gentiles. Why should I preach to them? We find in chapter 4, perhaps the greatest reason, the most selfish reason, which boils down to everybody in Nineveh is a bunch of jerks, and I don't like them. And if I go and preach, they may listen and be saved. But as we see over and over again, those who think that they know better than God are so soon shown the folly of their ways. Shortly after boarding the ship to Tarshish, a great storm came up. You see in verse 10 of Jonah chapter 1, then the men became extremely frightened and said to him, how could you do this? For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. So they said to him, what should we do to you that the sea may become calm for us? For the sea was becoming increasingly stormy. And he said to them, pick me up, throw me into the sea, then the sea will become calm for you. For I know on account of me this great storm has come upon you. However, the men rowed desperately to return to land, but they could not, for the sea was becoming even stormier against them. And they called on the Lord and said, we earnestly pray, O Lord, do not let us perish on account of this man's life. Do not put innocent blood on us. For you, O Lord, have done as you pleased. So Jonah realizes by running, he's put both himself and innocent men and the crew of the ship in danger. And he tells these men to throw him overboard to save themselves. So Jonah still couldn't accept God's mission. All the men of the ship, rightly would have anticipated that throwing him over into the stormy sea would have caused Jonah to drown and to die. He would still rather be dead than go to Nineveh. Even the sailors were incredibly reluctant to do it, and they tried desperately to get back to land, but they couldn't. So after praying to God to not put that sin upon them, they picked him up and tossed him over. See in verse 15, so they picked up Jonah, they threw him into the sea, and the sea stopped its raging. Then the men feared the Lord greatly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. But of course, God wasn't done with Jonah just yet. Verse 17, the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow Jonah. Jonah was in the stomach of the fish 3 days and three nights. So it must have been a very humiliating, humbling, almost disgusting experience for Jonah to stay in the belly of this fish in the dark, probably didn't smell good, probably didn't feel very good. So at last, Jonah realized the folly of his ways. He prayed to the Lord, and the fish finally vomited him out onto the dry land. The word of the Lord came to Jonah again. Instead of running, he went to Nineveh and preached the word of the Lord. Our second example perhaps even had better reasons, at least in his own mind, to avoid the call of God. But he soon learned, no matter what, God would be with him. Turn with me to Exodus chapter 3. Now, Moses was pastoring the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness, came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was blazing with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. And he said, Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. So here's another story that we're all familiar with. God had come to Moses and was now calling him to speak. Verse 10, Therefore come now, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. Of course, Moses also was not entirely enthusiastic, the idea of returning to a land that he hadn't seen for 40 years. This was a land that he had fled from in fear for his life from the Pharaoh. And even at the time when he left, even his own people were not that fond of him. So did Moses rise up and immediately go? No. He started to come up with every excuse that he could think of. Chapter 3, verse 11. Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? Verse 13. Then Moses said to God, Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you. Now they may say to me, What is his name? What shall I say then? In chapter 4, verse 1, Then Moses said, What if they won't believe me or listen to what I say? For they may say, The Lord has not appeared to you. In verse 10, Then Moses said to the Lord, Please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, nor recently, nor in time past, nor since you've spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. And then even in verse 13, finally, but he said, Please, Lord, now send the message by whomever you will. For every question, for every objection, for every excuse that Moses comes up with, though, God has an answer. When Moses says, I'm not special, who am I? God says in verse 12, I will be with you. When Moses says, But who should I say sent me? God gives him his name and says, I am who I am. When Moses says, No one will believe me that you sent me. He shows in chapter 4, verse 2, that signs will prove his word. God turns Moses' staff into a snake and brings it back. He turns his hand leprous and immediately heals it. When Moses says, "I'm not a good speaker," God says in verse 11, he'll let him know what to say. He won't have to come up with his own words. And finally, when Moses says, "Can't you just send somebody else?" God lets him know that he's not alone, neither spiritually nor physically. He'll have his brother Aaron right by his side to help him speak. And at last, Moses realized that God had all the answers to all his fears. So Moses met his brother. They met with the elders of the Israelites. And as a group, together, they went and preached to the Pharaoh. We have one more example that we want to look at briefly. Acts chapter 9. Now, there was a disciple at Damascus named Ananias. And the Lord said to him in a vision, "Ananias?" And he said, "Here I am, Lord." And the Lord said to him, "Get up and go to the street called Straight, and inquire at the house of Judas for a man from Tarsus named Saul, for he is praying. He has seen in a vision a man named Ananias come in and lay his hands on him that he might regain his sight." Ananias was also initially not so enthusiastic. He knew who Saul was. Everybody knew who Saul was. And the last that Ananias had heard, Saul was still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord. When we look at verse 13, "But Ananias answered, 'Lord, I have heard from many about this man, how much harm he did your saints at Jerusalem. And here he has authority from the chief priests to bind all who call on your name.' So he's scared, and rightfully so. As far as he knows, God is asking him to put his life on the line. But God answers him." Verse 5. "But the Lord said to him, 'Go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and all the sons of Israel. For I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake.'" And Ananias, he doesn't run. He doesn't protest. He puts his faith in God and he heads out. See in verse 17. "So Ananias departed and entered the house, and after laying his hands on him, said, 'Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road by which you were coming, has sent me that you may regain your sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit.' And immediately there fell from his eyes something like scales, and he regained his sight, and he got up and was baptized, and he took food and was strengthened." So Jonah tried to run, learned it was foolish to try and run from God, and he saved the life of 120,000 people. Moses tried to make excuses, but he learned that God has answers to his questions, and he saved over 600,000 people. Ananias put his trust in God to minister to Saul, and thereby countless numbers have been saved. So what does this mean for us in practical terms? We also have been given tasks. "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations." And sometimes that can be difficult. It can be scary. We can have our own various fears and our own habits to try and overcome in serving God, in making ourselves better Christians, and in spreading his word. And God knows this, and he understands this. But if we're willing to look to him, he has given us the tools that we need to overcome those fears and to put our skills into use. So, here then, I guess, is your homework assignment in those fears, right? I bring up the idea of me having stage fright, and I am still shaking with it, but I'm up here, because we have a task. I was asked to speak, and I said, I'm going to do my best to overcome that fear and to work on it. So if I can do it, I'm pretty sure that everyone else, no matter where you are with the Lord, there is some aspect of your spiritual life, I'm sure, that could be improved. So how do we do that? So, like I say, here's a little homework assignment. Maybe you'll put something into practice, maybe not, that's fine, you'll know, right? But if you're like me, and you're not so good at public speaking, I would encourage you to try it out. If you're not, men, if you're not on the list to lead a prayer or preside over the Lord's Supper or even a Wednesday night devotional, please do that. Especially with the devotionals, they're great practice. It's only 5 minutes. The audience is much smaller, and it will go a long way to helping you overcome your fear of public speaking, right? Or maybe you're more like me, and you have a problem just speaking to people, period. Really putting yourself out there, right? If you're a little introverted, your homework assignment is to maybe just one time this week in your daily walk at work, school, just out and about, try and be a little more open. Make eye contact with just one person and say hello. And that's all you have to do. Don't worry about, oh, how am I going to bring up Jesus and salvation and the cross? Just make a connection with someone. Make that one little step. Okay? Maybe that's not your issue. Maybe you don't have any problem speaking to people, and that's great. You know, maybe you're more like me, and you need to spend more time reading and studying the scriptures. Well, then your homework assignment this week, at some point, maybe you'll find yourself on the couch watching TV, right? Some sitcom or crime drama. Try and have the Bible just right next to you. And when a commercial comes on, instead of maybe channel surfing or fast-forwarding if it's on the DVR, hit the mute button on the remote instead. Pick up your scriptures. See if you can't just read one chapter. Right? It's maybe not much, but it's a good start. And little by little, maybe see if that crime drama doesn't become quite so important to you. Or maybe you're more like me and you know that you need to pray more often. You get caught up in work, school, and all the distractions of the day, and next thing you know, the entire day is over and you haven't thought about prayer even once. So here's your homework assignment. If you have a smartphone, there's plenty of apps that you can download that will set off random timers. Set something for 2 or 3 times in a day. When it goes off, just take a minute, take 30 seconds to stop wherever you are, whatever you're doing. If you're driving, don't stop. Close your eyes. But even while you're driving, take some time for a quick check-in with your father. And even if you don't have a smartphone, or if you're like my dad, as he said on Wednesday, doesn't know how to use one, Walmart is just down the street. You can pick yourself up a pack of sticky notes. Got some right here. They're real cheap for like a dollar. Take 2 or 3 of those. Put them around various places in your house or wherever. Put one on your bathroom mirror. Put one on the steering wheel of your car, wherever. Anytime that you run into that note, just take a minute and check in with prayer. Right? Maybe you're more like me and you need to watch your language a little better. Maybe not so much with cursing or vulgarities, but how we respond to people. Sometimes we can get snippy and tired and respond to anger with anger. There's another thing that you can do, is just be aware of when that happens. Try and make a mental note of it. Jot down some notes. You know, where was I? What was I doing? why did I say that, what I said to the person when I said it, right? See if we can't get to the root cause of what causes us to be short-tempered and snippy in with people. See if we can't come up with alternative things to say, right? Just a little thought. Sometimes the key to overcoming habits and fears that keep us from being who we need to be are just these small incremental changes. Staying focused and then allowing these changes to grow and not becoming discouraged when we hit setbacks, because we will. Right? And some of us may try to be more outgoing or study more or whatever and just not get there yet. But as long as we keep our hearts toward God and stay focused, we'll stay on track. So I like to say it's that I haven't failed, I just haven't reached success yet. You know, on the other hand, some changes we need to make in our life have to be all or nothing. If we're on a goal to lose weight, we can't say, well, I'm going to eat just one fewer Dorito this week. And maybe next week I'll eat two fewer Doritos. You're never going to get there. Sometimes the small changes aren't going to do it, and it has to be all or nothing. And that can be just as scary. And sometimes we need to admit to ourselves and to God that we're sinners. And we need to put Him on in baptism. Or that we need to say, I need help, and I need the prayers of the church. But even then, remember, just as in the examples we saw before, you are not alone. We all love you, and we all want to help you. And while taking a step out into the aisle and coming forward can be difficult, I can guarantee you that it will be worth it. In just a minute, I'm going to be stepping down from here. I'm going to be able to go home, change out of my now sweaty shirt, and I'm going to feel relieved that this is all over. But think how much more relief you'll feel from stepping up, shedding the pain and the burden of sin, and putting on a whole new life. So if you have any needs, or if you need the prayers of the church, I would ask that you would come forward now as we stand and sing.